And we are back with episode 839 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and wow, while we were out, we had some pretty cool shows pop up, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. So it's been an interesting few weeks. Yes, I know. I might as well go ahead and address that right off the top. We did kind of have to skip a week. Unfortunately, coming out of Thanksgiving weekend, when I thought that, oh, everything's going to be great, yeah, I got my fall cold, like the worst of them, and it was the one that kind of just kind of settled right into my throat. So not only could I not really speak, but I was coughing like constantly. So
well, it would have just been more editing, John.
Yeah. Well, that would have been true. It would have been quite a lot of editing. So yeah, it took an extra week in order to try to get a bit of health, shall we say, involved. So yeah, we're going to go ahead and... have our shows this week, and then more than likely we will have the next round of shows in a couple weeks when The Last Jedi premieres. So we may actually be able to speak about it practically the weekend that it comes out. Wouldn't that be awesome? But that will probably be it for this year, because as many might note, if you look at your calendars, each weekend after that is the holiday weekend. So it will be probably highly unlikely that we would be able to get together to record, unless we do it during the week between Christmas and New Year's, which we sometimes do, but I'm not making any promises. Let's go ahead and just assume that we'll have this week's worth of shows, and then one more time between now and the end of the year, and then we'll take a hiatus. But part of that hiatus is also going to be to try and rearrange things a little bit to make them more viable going forward in 2018. It's been a little bit of a rough scheduling year, but it looks like things will fall into a little bit easier pattern once we get past the beginning of the year. So that being said, Gary, it's been 3 weeks. What have you been up to?
I read through a whole book in 3 weeks. I read through Rebel Rising.
Okay.
And that's, you know, I'm not sure if you had talked on that book before. I know you do read a lot of Star Wars novels.
I don't remember that one.
Okay. Well, it's basically the Jyn Erso story from where she gets picked up by Saw Gerrera in the movie and where we see her getting freed from prison as she you know, becomes, as they flash forward to her being an adult. And so it fills in that gap between, and it fills it in very well. I enjoyed reading the book tremendously, and I crunched the last 100 pages of it until like 1:30 in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, because I did not want to put it down, because it was just, it was that that entrancing. It's written, the author's name escapes me, but I think her last name's Harris, and she did an exceptionally good job for me really capturing, I felt, the character between those two points and getting her there in a very believable, I'll say unexpected, but not like they wrote any crazy twist. It's just the way they got her to where she was at with her attitude was just very well layered, and the difficulties and problems that she faced along the way to have her at that sort of point, but still having hope for the future, or at least willing to fight for it. It did a very good job of building up her characterization for me. To some extent, I really wish I had almost read this book before I saw the movie. I think it would have really enhanced my liking of the movie. I'm going to go back and watch it hopefully within the next week or so to benefit from that insight. So, yeah, very, very good. I heartily recommend it.
Because I know that you read Catalyst, so I guess that this was your follow-up to that.
Yes, it was, and this was so much better than Catalyst.
Oh, really?
I thought so. Catalyst, what's his name? Galen's characterization in Catalyst always just struck me as very shallow, and I never really felt connected to the character at all while I was reading that book. I mean, the background was fantastic, and we see sort of, you know, the whole buildup and everything of that nature, but at the same time, the character did not grab me at all. And much of this Rebel Rising actually happens almost concurrently in some respects with that same sort of backstory. You know, as I said, from that time he gets, Galen gets kidnapped or repossessed by the Empire, however you want to refer to it, up until, Rogue One starts. So both books, happen within that same time frame. So you get little bits and pieces. I wouldn't by no means call them any sort of crossover or layover. There's only a few scattered touchstones here and there, but it's enough to realize that they're happening similarly. So it was a nice, it's like another camera perspective on that time frame. And Rebel Rising did it even better, I thought, than Catalyst did. Catalyst was nice because it gave you a lot of information and background history, so to speak. But I didn't feel the story was there as much as I did in Rebel Rising.
Okay, that's fair enough. Let's see. I also have been reading a Star Wars novel. I did read a few other things, of course, in the last few weeks, but I am currently almost halfway through with Ahsoka, which is the novel that, of course, is supposed to be between the end of her experiences in the Clone Wars show and then where she shows up in Rebels.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Have you read this one before?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did read that one. I went through a bunch of them. What did you think of her? What's the word to put it for? I found it interesting how she didn't necessarily have a drive to roll the Empire down or anything like that, at least not initially, that she just wanted to sort of get out and not be bothered.
Yeah, that was a little bit interesting to me that that's the way that it went. And in fact, being halfway through this book, I am kind of put off a little bit by the fact that not a lot has happened. It seems like there's a lot of glossing over of her motivations or even what may have happened. I think it may be that, you know, it is a difficult time for any Force user to be around in the timeline. So I don't know if they were hampered a bit by that or even by the fact that there wasn't a whole lot of information of what happened to her in Rebels. But I'm hoping that the second half of the novel is a little bit more action-packed, because right now it just seems like a lot of her kind of ruminating over the fact that she doesn't want to get involved unless she absolutely has to.
Well, I didn't give the spoiler warning for this episode, so I won't say anything yet.
There you go.
It was, I'd say the book was satisfying, not overwhelming.
Okay. Satisfying is good enough. Anything else you've been reading lately?
Some computer macro coding books, but that's not the topic of this show.
Not exactly what I had in mind.
One thing I did want to mention, it's not a book, but a series actually ended. It's not a series that we follow. How you want to refer to it. Some people just call it a home movie. Some people call it a web series. But the series I'm talking about is Star Trek Continues, where they sort of unofficially did the fourth and or fifth season of Star Trek, the original series. Through an agreement that has not really been talked about or published, given CBS Paramount's restrictions on fan films, they were able to release, after the fan film ruling came down, were able to release, I believe it was 4 additional full-length episodes.
I did wonder why that was the case, but I guess...
And it's never been clearly understood, except basically the fact of they only made $500,000 in donations and not $1 million. But yes, it is very interesting. Regardless, they have finished their run and they have no plans to go back and revisit the TOS world again. The last episode ended up, of course, with the Enterprise returning back after the end of their 5-year mission. Kirk being promoted to admiral and taking over Starfleet operations, and McCoy, Spock, both. Leaving Starfleet to go their own ways. So it was a very well done. Obviously they knew where they needed to get to pick up on the motion picture, and they brought it together very well. They had one or two extra characters that of course we never saw in the movie because they were created for the web series, and they did well to explain their absences going forward as well. It's the filming was done about an hour from my house in one of the studios. The studios that I know, John, you've seen me post ad nauseam pictures of, because if I'm sitting in the chair, I will keep posting that picture. They're all done filming, and it was a really good series. If you've liked TOS, it's probably, I would honestly say, of all the fan films out there, it's probably arguably number one or two. As far as series go, there's been a lot of cheesy Star Trek fan films, but this was not. It was very much shot not as a joke or even a funny mocking, but seriously, as episodes. They had time travel episodes. We got to visit, a Romulan commander cloaking device episode, Enterprise incident maybe, and
yes, I believe that's it.
Yeah, so they did over the course of their series episodes. I believe they had 13 total, 13 full length, productions with the same time breaks and everything else like the original series did. And there were some episodes that were perhaps lacking, but then so was Spock's brain. So I think we could take it all in stride. But regardless, they have finished their run. I'm not sure if they'll revisit the Star Trek universe in any way, given the restrictions. I have a feeling they were given a pass because they were well into production on all these episodes, if I had to guess. But regardless, it is over. It's freely available legally on the web. It's StarTrekContinues.com, and I make no money from plugging it. Just to say, as a devout Star Trek fan, it's definitely worth watching. It's a lot of fun, very enjoyable, and pretty darn accurate, so at least I feel it was. And so if you do like Star Trek, give it a shot. It's if you needed an extra season or two, it's a real nice fill-in.
It's good to know. Yeah, because I hadn't heard a whole lot other than what you've talked about now and then over the years. So, and who was it that actually was playing Kirk in those?
Vic Mignola is his name. He's also the producer. I think he put up a lot of his own money to make these things happen, and they really didn't see anywhere near the donations that more prominent Star Trek fan films did. They did get some, so I can't say that they haven't raised money externally for it, but nowhere near the amount of funds that that you would expect for a production of the quality that they did. So
yeah, no, Go ahead.
Grant from MythBusters played Sulu during the series.
Ah, okay.
I'm trying to think if there was any other sort of name drops that they've had in over the years. That's probably the biggest one though.
Yeah. Now Vic actually is a pretty well known person, as I recall. He is actually I shouldn't put it that way because I actually know pretty well. He's actually a voice actor and a pretty well known one in the anime world.
Really? I didn't know that.
Into the next topic that I have, which is the fact that one of the roles that he's best known for is Edward Elric from Full Metal Alchemist, the anime. A huge fan. My daughter is a huge fan of his. And actually, I bring that up because of all the various versions of the story that I have experienced in the last 3 weeks, the anime is the one I haven't. But I've been actually reading the original manga. I'm trying to finish the entire thing by the end of the year. And I'm past halfway through. So I'm up to volume 15, which is pretty far in, and enjoying it immensely. But also, I was at a little event called Anime NYC. This was right before Thanksgiving. And while we were there, we got to see the U.S. premiere of the live-action adaptation of Full Metal Alchemist. This is actually a fairly popular anime and property, so this was something that a lot of people were looking forward to, and it was an interesting adaptation, let's say. I say interesting because I feel like they tried to bite off way too many plot points over the course of the entire story, because even though they start off with the first third of the movie being almost the first three or four chapters of the original story, they start dropping plot points left and right. And they actually spoil, quote-unquote, a lot of what happens later in the story. It's rewritten in order to re-explain why those things work the way that they do in a shorter one-film type of story arc. But, yeah, it was a little rushed. It felt like they tried to jam too much in. But, wow, in terms of a Japanese-driven live-action adaptation, the effects were really good. Usually there's a certain cheesiness to them, I guess you could say, but in this case, it reminded me a lot of some of the better effects from the Tokyo Ghoul adaptation a few weeks ago that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing those characters come to life was a lot of fun. So, yeah, there may be some cosplay in the future. I mean, already she cosplays Edward, so she's looking forward to having someone kind of join her in the fun. So, yeah, that could definitely be happening in 2018. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I would say if you are a fan of the property, go ahead and, when it's available for wider distribution, go ahead and give it a shot. You'll probably at least enjoy seeing a live action version. And you know, one of the main characters, one of the Elric brothers, Alphonse, is actually basically just a suit of armor, just with a soul inside of it, right? So it's empty.
Yes.
It's a completely CGI creation, and yet there's a lot of times where you're like, wow, that actually, the physics that are involved, it makes it look like there is in fact something there when there isn't. Which, you know, that happens all the time in our bigger budget productions here in the U.S., but for this to be done so well with the kind of limited budget that we're used to seeing in the Japanese adaptations is really just showing how much support they had. I think Warner Brothers actually supported this and helped fund it. So it is a pretty big major production in terms of a lot of international support. So it's a fun one. There's humor, but there's also a lot of creepiness and a lot of really disturbing things that happen. So kind of a little bit of everything for everyone. So yeah, that I would recommend to go ahead. I still feel like the Tokyo Ghoul adaptation was perhaps a bit more faithful and a little bit better thought out in terms of not trying to do too much. But it's really hard to imagine that they wouldn't try to put all this stuff in there just because, hey, let's give fans a movie that hits all the high notes that they remember as much as possible and then still leaves the door open for future exploration. So, let's see. What else, Gary, have you been up to?
Let's see. Oh, what? I know I've seen a movie or two since then.
Oh, there's this one that was out in the U.S. here that I'm sure that you've seen that I haven't, but I'm not really jumping to go and see it. This is like a buddy movie or team up or something.
Oh, yes, yes. You're not talking. We've already talked about Thor, though, right? Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you're not talking about Crisis on Earth X.
No.
That wasn't a movie. Yeah. Okay. Yes. That little one with Superman in it. Yes. Yeah. Justice League. I guess I wasn't in. Didn't come to mind. So I guess that says a big deal.
Yeah, that's really saying a lot, isn't it?
Especially me as a DC fan.
Yes.
Let's see. I don't think it deserved the negative press that it got. I thought it was a reasonably good movie, by no means earth-shattering in its storyline or its presentation, honestly. I have to say, I thought Ben Affleck did a very good job as Batman. This is not Batman as Bale did him by any means. He's a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more comfortable with other people. And I think Bale's interpretation was, you know, very much the loner. So it's not bad, though. Even in comic books, Batman vacillates between a good team player and a loner. So I didn't have a problem with that. Even the person that I thought I would not like the most, who was Aquaman, because the interpretation is so different from the traditional. Mm-hmm. About halfway through the movie, especially as they sort of modified his look slightly for battle, I guess, I found him coming across much better, and I enjoyed the character more than I ever thought I would. There's some characters, like Cyborg, I felt were underused. I wanted to see more, and I didn't get to see enough of him. I thought the actor did a very good job, and there was a lot of potential in the character that we never really got to see because there just wasn't enough time with six superheroes jammed into this film. There wasn't enough time. You know, especially for what I'll call new characters like Flash, Aquaman, or Cyborg, they did not have solo movies to acquaint us with them.
What I was going to ask, actually, is if you feel like that was part of the problem, was that by not having those earlier films to establish the characters that, you know, that could have mitigated the lack of screen time in this movie.
The only character I really had the problem with was the Flash. I felt that they played him as comic relief and almost farcically so. To the point of laughing at him rather than with him. And so I wish that was handled differently. I don't like the idea that having Barry as the unexperienced person, so to speak. I thought he'd always had a level head on his shoulder and honestly provided usually a balance to Batman or people who had sort of more varied views, and he'd be definitely somebody to sort of bring somebody back into tow before they'd go too far or something like that. So we had none of that. So it was a very different Flash character. In some ways, he was more different as Flash than the Aquaman character was from the original from the base character, which I thought was surprising given the appearances. But I guess appearances aren't everything. So, Wonder Woman, I really didn't feel that she got enough actual plotline development. Yes, she smashed a lot of people. The scene where the villain of Steppenwolf? Oh, yeah, Steppenwolf. yeah, of all the villains to pick. Anyway, of Steppenwolf, the scenes where he's fighting on Themyscira were it was great visually. It was quite a battle scene. I enjoyed that a lot. But Steppenwolf was his CGI was so horrible. I have to question number one. I watched the credits, but I don't know if he was actually credited as an actor. But if he was overlaid with CGI so much and not good CGI, you could make out the pixelization where I was watching. And it was just really horrible that they couldn't do a better job with the main villain. It was very disappointing. If I didn't know better, I would almost think they dubbed him in the last month before the show came out. It was his renderings were that horrible. Wow. So that kept taking me out of it as I would see a pixelated villain.
Yeah, that's really hard to imagine. But at the same time, with all of the changes that they've been making, I wonder if that was part of the issue.
Yes.
I would like to see, quite honestly, from DC is maybe, just maybe, a movie that doesn't end with the third act being a CGI fest. And a badly done CGI fest.
Well, the thing is, almost
honestly,
all the rest
they
of
had
it,
yeah. they had
almost all the rest
wasn't?
Of it was, yeah, was good CGI, except for him. I just didn't get it. That being said, let's see, anything else I could comment on? I thought the story ended at a good point. You could tell when Joss took over in this film. It's about it's about 45 minutes in, and it takes a hard turn. You could say, everyone's used to each other now because they've now been introduced to each other and they're comfortable around each other. If that's what you want to say, fine. But you could see the entire tone of the movie took a 90-degree turn. And it went from this dark, brooding thing that Snyder is known for to fun might be a little strong, but definitely enjoyable. I mean, it was, everyone was sort of like where you're like when you're doing something together with a friend. Come on, guys, let's go. We got to get OK. You know, everybody's sort of, in the groove and going for it. And that's what I had. And it felt I realized that, I'm saying Avengers like because, he did direct Avengers. But you have that sense that these people want to be where they are doing what they're doing, and they're happy that these other people are around with them. And that's the feeling that we started to get. Everything seemed to lighten up. Superman had the most nicest blue costume I've seen in several movies, and he was upbeat and positive and everything you would expect Superman to be that he hasn't been before. Batman was a little still slightly brooding, but not pathologically so, and I think the cast was well balanced out. You had different things going on, both as people who were confident, people who didn't want to be bothered, people who were glad to take up the cause, people who didn't know what they were doing, and it all sort of meshed together pretty darn well. So, I would if you have a chance to see it in the movies, I think I'd enjoy it. The Themyscira battle scene alone was phenomenal. I don't want to spoil. I really don't want to spoil the whole trick of the scene, but it's worth viewing at some point. Even if you don't go to the theater, make sure even if you just catch those 10 minutes, it's an amazing battle. It's an amazing battle scene. It's so well done.
Yeah, I would hope that we would eventually get to be there, but at the same time, I wonder if it's going to be holding out and seeing whatever theater still has it between Christmas and New Year's at this rate. It's really sad to say. Yeah, you think they will? Because I think
they'll probably go through the holidays, is my guess. Yeah.
I just think it's sad that, a movie like this is actually, at least domestically, coming in pretty low and not nearly the expectations that people had for it. I think internationally it's still doing fine, but...
Yeah, it is, and, this is one of those things, to be honest with you, I think the critics killed it. They were... Before, I think you saw more than the trailer, they were already bashing the heck out of it. I think at one point it started off with a Rotten Tomato score of 19. Even though within the first weekend, people were saying it was good, that they enjoyed it. I mean, it might not have been phenomenal beyond belief, but it was a good, fun movie that definitely introduced a new version of most of these characters. I was happy with it. I've scarily heard people wish that Zack Snyder would re-release a cut of his version of the movie, and I'm thinking to myself, dear God, why?
I don't think that's
this movie
advised either.
This movie, if it went the way that the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie would have went, would not enjoy what popularity it does have. at least not for me. I mean, I don't get the cult of Snyder and this idea that the DC group of heroes should be dark, depressing, moody characters. That goes completely against type. If anything, DC comics are typically the lighter of the two genres. Mm. So how they're becoming the dark, edgy part is beyond me.
Yeah, well, you know, it is kind of bringing up something that, I mean, infamously in the last few weeks, we've heard that the quote-unquote Universal Dark Universe is dead after one bad movie, which actually it's not one bad movie. People kind of forget that they tried to do the first movie as that Dracula Untold was supposed to be the first one, and it did so incredibly bad that they disavowed it for all intent purposes. But at any rate, I don't want to get too far off.
Yeah.
It's more that it's far more difficult than people think it is. Marvel didn't try to declare the Marvel Cinematic Universe until it was essentially successful. They didn't go in thinking, "Hey, we're gonna declare 17 movies and, you know, be surprised when we start to run into problems in movie 2 or 3." It was kind of amazing that they did a few of these movies and then announced the Avengers. But at any rate, I think that momentum has a lot to do with it. Marvel had a very good momentum going when they decided to make this a bigger, you know, more expansive property, and they're going to have their own problem. They're going to have the issue of, can we end a big, massive storyline? Never mind start one. I mean, that's what they're trying to set up in Phase 3. Phase 3 is effectively the third act of their major, you know, story arc. But at any rate, that's positive momentum. You've got a franchise with Marvel that you can have even a misstep, and I think that some people consider a couple of the Thor films not to be particularly strong, even though Ragnarok was. But you can even have people say, this movie was terrible, but they'll still come back and look at the next one. Where look at even another Marvel property, like the X-Men universe. The kind of shine is off of that one, because after Apocalypse, people are like, you know, is this going to go the way of Logan and Deadpool, or is this going to go the way of another step down from even Apocalypse? They're kind of wishy-washy about it. But DC, I think that's the exact problem that they ran into. Negative momentum. There was such a negativity after Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad. And then this feeling of, is Wonder Woman the exception that proves the rule? That I think Justice League was never going to get the fair shake that maybe you're suggesting it needed. Because I think that, yeah, the critics and even a lot of DC fans were looking for blood. And they're going to have to prove that they've turned things around. They're not going to have the kind of built-in goodwill that Marvel has right now. But that's just my take on it. I think that it's a matter of too many missteps along the way and really just not having the right person kind of running the show. I think it started off too dark, and I think that it started off too kind of isolated and insulated, but that's just my take on it. And I haven't seen Justice League to know, but I do know the sentiment out there. And the sentiment is that what you're getting right now is a feeling that Marvel is the in crowd. And you also have some people that are acting like, even when they are the fans of the DC universe, that the DC films are the underdog. The extreme underdog at this point. So, yeah, they've got some work to do. Even if this was a really good, good enough film, let's say, they've still got work to do to build up the goodwill that they need in order to really sustain a quote-unquote universe. And I think that people need to stop trying to create a universe before the films even come out.
Yeah.
Just put the films out, see if it gels, and if it does, the public will tell you. Don't try and shove it down the public's throat. Because we've seen how many cinematic universes fall apart.
True.
Yeah.
So, like I said, there were a lot of gems in there. It had its weaknesses too. And I'm personally thrilled that Snyder was off the film. I'm not happy the reason why he had to be, but I was still happy that someone else had taken up the reins. And I am sorry that this wasn't more of a success. Although, I mean, it's making money, so I can't say that.
Right.
Oh, it's by no means bombed. I know it's more than covered its production, so it is in the black. Hollywood of bookkeeping aside. But it's good, but it's not that overwhelming success, and I hope they don't go running back to Snyder as a result of it, saying, oh, it would have been amazing if he had done it.
Well, that's what some people are saying, right? And that's what you were saying was so disappointing, is this, let's put out his cut, and it's, no, guys, stop. You know, he's going to have to adjust, even if he does come back. And yeah, you say, you know, it's a success. It has made worldwide almost $600 million. I don't know what the budget was because it doesn't say. It says NA here on
Box. I thought I heard 200.
Okay, so if that's the case, it's already, and it's, if 200 is the number, then domestically it is just a few million away from that. So I'm sure by next weekend it would cross the threshold. But yeah, at this point, are we looking at a $1 billion movie? Not so sure. And it is coming in pretty low compared to the other ones. If I look at the DC Universe numbers, domestically at least, this is coming in well below Man of Steel and nowhere near Wonder Woman. Worldwide, it is still, even worldwide, it is the lowest so far. So, I mean, it will need legs in the theater in order to catch up with the rest of them.
Well, I don't think it ever was ever going to hit Wonder Woman numbers. I don't even think they expected that, but...
No, but when you look then at the Avengers, absolutely, trouncing the other movies in the Marvel Universe, if I go to those, I could find my way to it. But when you look at those, granted there's a lot of other films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but the Avengers movies are the ones at the top of the list. Let me see if I can bring that up right now. So Marvel Cinematic Universe... Yeah, The Avengers is at the very top of the list, and worldwide it made $1.5 billion. So it's not even in the same class as The Avengers.
Yeah.
And I think that's what DC was hoping for.
Well, like I said, I don't think they had the impetus with all the separate movies ahead of time to build the audience. And hurt might not be the wrong thing with a $600 million gross in less than a month. But yeah, it definitely did not help amp it up the way that Avengers was able to build off basically four movies and in some ways four different audiences, or at least, that if you assume that each movie might generate some unique audience to come together. So, but yeah, I mean, I didn't feel like I was ripped off. I felt it was a much truer interpretation of most of the characters than we've seen in the cinematic universe to date. So it was okay. It wasn't a blockbuster blow away, but I can't. Like I said, it wasn't by any means bad.
No, if you enjoyed it, then that's at least something.
Yes.
So there you go. Let's see, what else do we have as we round out this particular first episode of the week? I'll just say that on the TV side, well, let me finish the movies. I did go out and see Howl's Moving Castle with the Spawn over the last week. Saw it in the Japanese version with subtitles. That was a lot of fun. It was.
I have never seen that.
Oh, see, that's one of the most popular Studio Ghibli movies. I think that you guys would really enjoy that one. It's actually really, really well done. And then I did get started on The Punisher.
I watched the first two episodes, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm four or five. I can't remember, but I did get a chunk in, but then there was, other stuff going on. So, and there was this little crossover event that took place that actually was better than Justice League, from what I hear.
Yes.
We'll talk about that soon.
Yeah.
But yes, I did get into that. I did not get any further into Stranger Things 2, hopefully between now and the end of the year. And I've also been spending some time kind of cleaning up my queue on Crunchyroll, so I did finish watching some anime from last year, which was actually very enjoyable, and I'm very sad that one of them that I enjoyed the most, which is called Alderaan on the Sky, is only going to really have the one season, because it really left off on a spot where it could have gone for quite a while with some twists and turns, and unfortunately it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So that's always a bummer when you start a good story and it doesn't seem like it's going to go anywhere. And then finally, on the reading front, I finished reading a supernatural novel called Usual Sacrifices. Pretty quick read. Only a few days, about 300 pages, so not too bad. And it really felt like a good supernatural adventure, so for fans of the franchise, I would recommend it. It's a good read. So, any last thoughts from you, Gary, on the last 3 weeks of various activities?
Oh, no, I think that's it at the moment.
Okay, so what we'll go ahead and do is round out this episode, and when we come back next time, we will start our episodic discussion. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.